From the heart of rural France, this is the Keto Woman podcast, brought to you by me. Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. I've been keto now for over 2 years and it has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs under 20 grams a day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds and the incidental carbs you find in things like full fat dairy. Choose delicious fatty proteins and be free and easy with oily dressings on salad and butter on your veggies. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. You'll hear all sorts of ways to keto from my guests. There is no one way to do keto, no one size fits all. I hope to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we really can't give you medical advice. It's always best to consult your own doctor when making big changes to your diet and lifestyle, because they know you and your medical history, and so have access to the bigger picture. Wouldn't it be helpful to have one place where you could find all the links? Want to sign up to my new Patreon-exclusive Facebook group, Daisy's Lovelies? No problem. How about subscribing to my YouTube channel? Please help me notch up my first 1,000 subscribers by going to links.ketowomanpodcast.com and following the YouTube link. Not following me on Instagram yet? Hit the Instagram button. You get the idea. All the buttons, all the links you need are at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. Thank you, Cecilia, for supporting me and this podcast by making a pledge at my Patreon page. Do you want to hear your name here at the top of the show? Are you enjoying this podcast and would like to help me make more episodes? Then head over to my Patreon page at patreon.com/ketowoman or hit the support button on the Keto Woman podcast website. It means a great deal to me and you will get to headline the show just like Cecilia did today. Welcome to episode number 178, where I am joined by extraordinary woman Kelly LeBlanc for the second part of her episode. Do go back to last week's episode if you haven't listened already to hear more about Kelly. I'm sure you don't want to listen to me ramble on, so let's jump straight back in where we left off last week. I need to warn you, though, that Kelly talks about some really heavy stuff in this episode, which you might find upsetting. It's an important part of her story, and she was very brave to share such experiences with me. Kudos to her and the strength she showed in her willingness to be vulnerable, as well as the hard emotional work she has been doing. Thank you, Kelly. You are inspirational as well as extraordinary.
I had to do it in a compassionate way, in a way that allowed me to not beat myself up for the choices I had made. And that actually took a lot longer, right? So I would have these episodes of, you know, 8 months, 9 months of being really good, really like clean keto and feeling amazing. And then deciding, oh, I'm celebrating something and this time I'm going to have wine and I'm going to have all the carbs and I'm just going to have a bunch of fun. And it never stopped at that one celebration because I'm not a person who can do moderation at all.
No, same here. But I think that's what we're trained to, you know, from an early age. Certainly, that's the way you were trained. That's the way, I mean, most women I know have been trained into this habit of, if you've got weight issues, that you're losing weight or you're gaining weight, but it's always predominantly a question of mind over matter. It's basically a question of willpower.
Yeah.
And so you're constantly going through this battle. If only I can sustain it, if only I can stick to it, if only I can do what I'm supposed to do, then I will lose the weight and I will be able to sustain it. And it is true in one respect, you know, that works. That is a good way to lose the weight, following that approach. But if the root of the problem comes from somewhere else, that just trying to white knuckle it through and rely on willpower alone is never going to work.
That's right. And I think, you know, our society, and I'm not sure if this is global or if it's specific to North America, but you're kind of guilted if you don't want to go along, if you don't want to do the same things that everybody else are doing. Mm. You know, you're made to feel like you're causing a problem if you refuse to eat in a certain way, or if you, you know, if you're not going along with what everybody else is doing. And I have theories on that. I mean, some part of me feels like it's, you know, other people want everybody to be doing the same thing so that whatever they're experiencing, they're doing, you know, they can tell themselves that they're doing all the right things because everybody's doing it. But I think it's just conditioning as well. We were all brought up this way, right? So when you go out, when you're socializing and you're doing something different than what all the others are doing, people will say, oh, just a bite won't hurt you. But in my case, it did. Mm. You know, I once went to a party and had a slice of pizza and didn't stop eating carbs for a year, even though I knew better. What it triggered in me just made it so that I would prefer to choose eating the carbs. And I know it's a choice, right? But the mental and emotional turmoil that I went through made it so difficult for me to get back on track. Even when I would try, you know, I would be good for a couple of weeks, but eventually somebody else would say, oh, just a little bite. And I'd be like, you're right, it won't hurt. And the opportunities for somebody to tell you just a bite won't hurt, not now with COVID, that doesn't happen. But before COVID, that was like 2 or 3 times a week. So you would say no, you know, I would start saying no on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. But by the weekend, I was like, oh, it's the weekend. Let's have a little fun. You know, how many times do you say no? And the more you say no, kind of the more aggressive people would get about trying to convince you that it was okay. Mm. And it's not okay for me. Maybe it is for some people, but for me, it was not okay. I stopped saying no eventually, you know. And it's kind of weird because it kind of feeds into the things that I'm starting to learn about myself, in that I was choosing. So I have these rebellious times in my life where I will be okay with making people feel uncomfortable. But the vast majority of the time, I will choose to do the thing that makes the other people comfortable. Mm. Even if it makes me uncomfortable, because I would rather not cause a scene or make other people uncomfortable or be the person who's considered difficult. So I would put all of that on myself, and then I would beat myself up about it when I would get home, you know, and that would just start an entire cascade of, you know, guilt and oftentimes giving up. You know, I can't do this anyway. And even though I had plenty of experience that I could do it. it's just one of those things. And then I know I've heard many, many people say this. You wouldn't do that to an alcoholic. Mm. You wouldn't say just have one drink to a recovering alcoholic. But people feel perfectly fine in shaming others for having different food choices or lifestyle choices or anything else, really. But it's just not okay. And I need to put myself first if I want to be successful and choose the things that are right for me. That's one of the things I need to work on. But I think as an entire society, we need to stop putting that pressure on other people. You know, I started calling people out, you know, basically telling them, would you do this if I was an alcoholic and you were offering me a drink? Would you do this? Mm. And the answer is always no. Mm. And so then I turn it around and say, so why are you doing it with food? Because I have a food addiction.
Yeah, people just need to understand that it is the same.
It is.
It's the same problem.
Yeah. I remember I had an HR moment, and it's not super negative, but they had brought donuts and muffins for a breakfast event that we were having. It was a milestone celebration, and everybody, you know, was meeting. You know, I wasn't eating any of the sweets that they had brought in, and the head of HR came over to me and asked me why, and I said, I just don't want any. And she kept on pushing me. Oh, just have one, just have one. I said, well, you're not having any either. Why are you not having any? She's like, well, I've already eaten breakfast. I said, well, so have I. I ate at home. And she just wouldn't drop. She wouldn't drop it. And I said, well, if these things are not good enough for you to eat, why are they good enough for me? Is it because I'm fat? She never, never brought it up again. And from that moment on, whenever we had any food brought into the office, there were healthy options. But people don't think about it, right? She didn't intend to make me feel bad. She didn't intend to pressure me into eating. Mm. That's just the way things have always been. That's just the way, you know, the interaction around food has always been. If there's food made available, you're expected to participate. Mm. So, yeah, it was just an interesting little thing. And now, actually, it's kind of funny. A part of my transformation into how I think about food, but also about myself, and also trying to honor myself more, has actually spread into all areas. So diversity and inclusiveness, I'm a big, you know, I'm on the council at work now and just paying more attention to everything. It's interesting how when you switch one thing, when you start thinking about one thing differently, how everything changes.
So what's the thing that's fallen into place recently? Presumably because I know sort of some of the context, there was some chronic pain issues because there had to be something there for a particular post and some episodes that have recently been on the podcast that triggered a change in you. So why don't you just tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, that's actually, I started working from home COVID related on March 13th. And both my husband and I actually started working from home. And as part of working from home, your communication and relationships with the people that you work with do change a little bit. And maybe I was paying more attention to things. Over a couple of months, I started having really bad neck, shoulder, and back pain radiating down into my right leg. And I thought, okay, well, I don't have a very good ergonomic setup at home. So, you know, I thought it's posture or the way I'm sitting or something like that. You know, it's easy to come up with the physical reasons. So I spent a little bit of money on setting up a proper office with all the ergonomic things that you would expect, a nice chair. I bought a sit-stand desk. I bought some nice monitors, this headset, which I absolutely love. You know, I made sure I was decked out with everything that I was told would help alleviate the pain. And I also went to see my chiropractor who at the time said, there's really actually nothing wrong. You know, he told me, he goes, are you stressed out? Are you, you know, we were having these conversations with him, but nothing clicked for me. I didn't feel stressed. Nothing had changed. So nothing mattered. Nothing seemed to be helping. And the pain was progressing. It was getting worse. It was getting to the point where I could barely use my right arm, and my left arm was getting pretty bad. I couldn't stand for very long. I mean, I could walk as long as I was moving and not sitting still in one spot. But if I actually stood still, like say if I was preparing a meal, my right leg would go completely numb, and it was tingling, burning, you know, electrical kind of pain. It was getting to the point where I couldn't actually cook. And cooking is actually something that I'm passionate about. But nothing was helping. I added massage therapy. I went to see a physical therapist on top of my chiropractor. It's actually quite funny because everything helped a little bit. Mm. you know, everything I added helped a little bit, but it never went away.
That's the thing, isn't it? You think, well, if I just do more of that.
Exactly.
It'll solve it. Mm.
So I kept adding more and more and more. But at one point, I remember getting off of a call, a work-related call, and coming over to sit just for a few minutes with Mike. I just had to talk about what had just happened. And I was talking with him. And, you know, he's like, oh, I heard you. You were so upset that you were speaking loudly enough that I heard you across the house. And we had a conversation about it, 10, 15 minutes. This was a Thursday. And so as is typical, I tend to be the type of person who everybody goes to when things need to get done and nobody else is doing them. So I have a wide range of experience and I can pretty much step into any role at work, whether it be on the business side or on the technical side. I was supposed to be having a long weekend, and this was Thursday at 6 p.m. when I got off the phone with this person who asked me to do something for them ASAP. And I explained to them, I'm on vacation, you know, tomorrow and Monday and the weekend. When do you need this by? And they said, Tuesday morning.
Hmm.
So I was a little, can anybody else do it? You know, all those questions. So I ended up having to work the whole weekend to get this report done. And yes, I was probably the best person to do it, but I was not the only person. I was just the only person who cared enough to do it. Everybody else kind of said, not my job. And so Friday, I was fuming. I actually remember drinking quite a bit Friday night just to numb those feelings. Saturday, I believe it was Saturday, I logged on to Facebook and I saw your post from Kelly Canudos, and I hope I pronounced her name correctly.
Canueto.
Okay, I will make sure that I ingrain that. But I immediately saw your post, and it triggered something in me, but I wasn't ready to read it yet.
Mm.
I saved it to come back to later, and you know, right around then, Mike got up and made us some coffee, and I was talking to him about it. And I was telling him, you know, something about it. I'm going to, you know, when I have time to spend on it, I'm going to get back to it. So that evening, I read through the entire post. And by then, there were already quite a few comments. And, you know, the topic, I think, was fibromyalgia and I can't remember what else, chronic pain and a couple of other topics, which I've never been diagnosed with any of those. But boy, was I in chronic pain.
Mm.
And I thought, okay, I read through everything and it gave me a bit of hope, actually, to be honest with you. So this was Saturday evening and it was pretty late and I was drinking again because, you know, of course I was. I'd been working all day and just took a couple hours in the evening to relax. And I think Mike and I actually probably ended up having 3 bottles of wine between the two of us that night. So quite a large amount of wine. And the next morning, I got up and I told Mike, I said, I'm not doing any work all morning. I'm not doing any work. And I went in and I looked at all the resources that Kelly had provided. And I started watching the videos and I started reading some of the links, TMS and a couple of other items. And I found Nicole Socks on YouTube. And right then, I decided I was going to try this. It resonated enough with me that I felt, well, what do I have to lose? It's either going to work or it's not going to work. But if I don't do something, I'm just going to keep getting worse.
Yeah. What's the worst that can happen? You waste a bit of time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was one of the Dr. Sarno videos really that convinced me that this could work for any pain. Not just back pain or fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue. He said, you know, something that after he discovered his method, that there was not a single person that he saw afterwards. And he was a surgeon, right? A back surgeon. He never did surgery after that. And there was basically not a single person that this, I would call it a protocol for lack of a better word, not a single person was not helped. people had different results based on the amount of effort that they were willing to put into it, but everybody did have some relief based on this process. So that was, to me, was like, well, okay, this is going to work. Because I knew, I only shared the brief highlights. There's so much I could go into all the trauma that I've endured in my life, but there has been a lot. And he actually said it, and then when I watched Nicole Sack's video, she reiterated it, that most of the trauma that we internalize as children come from our immediate family, and more specifically, usually your mother. And that was the case for me. You know, I have never, ever, so I'm very successful. I have an amazing job. I lead a team of people, amazing people, DevOps team. I've done and succeeded and excelled at everything I've ever tried. I had the highest marks in school, full scholarship to university, full scholarship to med school, which I quit because I didn't agree with what they were teaching. But I've always excelled at everything, but I've never felt I was ever good enough. I was never smart enough. My marks were never high enough. I was never thin enough. I was never pretty enough. Just never enough. Mm. And then I started thinking about the episodes closest to, and this was work-related, right? But my pain was absolutely 100% related with what was going on at work. And obviously the thing that I first thought about was, well, why didn't I just say no to this person, that I wasn't going to work all weekend for them? Mm. What am I feeling around this? And I was angry and resentful, and I identified those feelings, and I not only the feelings, but why? And what could I have done differently? What would I have done if I was honoring myself? And almost immediately, the pain went away. I had no pain, none. Now, that's not to say that it didn't come back, because I'm still who I am. And I still have a lot of work to do to become who I want to be. But Mike was doing something in the garage, and he came in, and I said, you have to watch this video. And I played it for him, and he's like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. I said, Mike, I don't have any pain. He's like, what are you talking about? You haven't been able to lift your arms or stand. I cooked a full meal that day. I cooked a full meal, and I had no pain. And I was fine until Tuesday when I went back to work. And the person that I had provided the report to evidently didn't need it as quickly as they thought they had, because they didn't even acknowledge that I had sent it. And I'm going through my email. I think I had 200 or 300 emails, because, you know, just because you take time off, the work doesn't go away. It just waits for you. Mm. I remember going through my emails, and we use Teams chat app at work, and realizing that, unlike me, he had enjoyed his weekend and didn't even acknowledge all the work that I had done, and didn't even know I had sent it to him. And all the pain came back. All of the pain came back, and it was worse. And I didn't realize it immediately. It was so familiar to me, this pain. I didn't even notice it for a couple of hours. And then I thought to myself, what's happening? What's happening? What's going on? And I couldn't. It took me a while, actually a little longer this time, to figure out. I actually logged off of work. I had only put in about a half hour, an hour maybe. And I took 2 hours to myself to just try and figure it out. I shut everything. I went into a room all by myself. I really suck at journaling, so I didn't do the journal speak. What I did instead was just try to pay attention to how I was feeling and why, and ask myself questions around that. And obviously it came back to the whole work thing. And again, within a very short period of time, as soon as I acknowledged not only why, you know, what I was feeling, but why, and I think maybe for me what was critical was how I could have handled it differently, the pain went away again, completely. And it was mind-blowing. And it just, you know, I have to say, like, I knew I had been seen by a couple of doctors, so I knew there wasn't actually anything physically wrong. You know, they said, well, maybe you're stressed and you have a little inflammation and maybe that's pinching a nerve. But there was actually nothing physically wrong with me. And I knew that, which helped, right? Because that's part of this process, the TMS, is knowing that you're fine, that there's nothing wrong with you. So after that, I caught myself. I got better at catching myself when the pain would start. And sometimes now all I need to say to myself is, there's nothing wrong with you. Where's this pain coming from? There's nothing wrong. And it'll be enough for me to start feeling better. So I kept kind of diving down this TMS rabbit hole, if you will, and then started really feeling like, okay, this is not just about pain. I haven't actually found anything online to support this, but I remember a couple of weeks after I watched the videos and started practicing this, I had a chiropractor appointment. And my chiropractor is also the functional medicine doctor that helped me with the adrenal fatigue. And I told him, you know, he had been helping me with my shoulder pain and back pain and neck pain. I told him what happened and what I was doing. And he said, yeah, he goes, this is very common. The majority of people I see have emotional pain causing physical symptoms, but most people will not work on their emotional pain. Mm. They will not work on their trauma. So nothing we can do helps them permanently. We can alleviate the pain or whatever they're going through. And so this is my doctor. He's telling me, can you please send all of this information to my wife, who's also a chiropractor? And, he's like going to start incorporating this in his clinic, actually. So
fantastic.
Quite surprising. But it was funny to me that he knew this, but was so used to people not being willing to do this work that he never mentioned it to me. I had to find it.
Yes. Again, I wonder if it's kind of similar in a way. It's this similar cycle to what we mentioned before about the type 2 diabetes and the typical approach they have, and this general acceptance that this is a progressive disorder and the best we can do is manage it. It feels very similar, doesn't it? That it perhaps they're just the two things sort of feed each other and create this dynamic. You know, perhaps maybe at some point it's something that they've tried to implement and people haven't been willing to change or whatever it is. And they just get into this pattern of acceptance. Mm-hmm. Both parties just get into this pattern of acceptance that this is just something that I've got. And the best we can do is to try and manage and alleviate the symptoms. And you just forget that there's something else that you could be putting in as a suggestion, as an alternative. And it takes somebody like you coming to him, and you see this with, you know, GPs. You know, I'm thinking of someone like David Unwin, who it took a patient coming to him and talking about blood sugars and the difference they'd made by changing their diet, that just clicks something back into their brain and actually has the end result of them completely changing their practice and the way they help other people.
Yeah, that's probably true, you know. And even if he had initially started with this as an option for his patients, it's really difficult work. Mm. It's hard. I've cried a lot. I've screamed and yelled. And I've only started scratching the surface of where my trauma comes from. I've actually only looked at the more recent, you know, what's happening today or within the last couple of years that I haven't dealt with, right? But I know that I have a lifetime of trauma that I need to work through. And it's scary. It's really scary. I mean, I've openly talked about things that I've gone through, and I really thought I had dealt with these things. But what I realize now is I didn't deal with them. I accepted them. Mm. I accepted that they were just the normal way things are. But I didn't release them. They're still part of me. They're still hurting me. They're still my default way of dealing and handling things. And until I work through all of it, or at least more of it, it's a struggle for me to remember this new way. You know, I still default to stuffing my emotions, not speaking my mind, not making other people uncomfortable, choosing their wellness and happiness over mine. And I really feel that until I kind of unprogram that part of me and replace it with something healthier, which I'm actively working on, honestly, and sharing all of my discoveries along the way as much as I can. But until I get to a tipping point where I've done enough of the work that that's not my default anymore, it's still a struggle. And it impacts everything, actually. I initially came to this because of the pain and because I was experiencing pain. But like I said, it's changed how I think about my entire life and everything that I experience, including my health and wellness and weight loss and diet. But not just that, like being female in a predominantly in a society that was that's geared towards men, white men. And hopefully nobody gets offended by that. But, you know, just imagine being a minority, right? So I used to joke that the only people at work that were more, you know, I said the only way I could have more things against me at work is if I was also colored, you know, because I'm a short, fat, old woman. You know, the only way is if I was a minority, would it be worse? But it's not exactly true. I know I'm still privileged and I know I still have a lot of opportunities, unfortunately, that other people don't have. But it's also changed that for me. Like, I'm an advocate for these people now. Not only am I speaking my truth and not accepting the way that I've behaved in the past, the way that I've been programmed, but I'm also helping other people have their voice. I'm also making sure that there's a safe place for people to come and talk about the things that they need to talk about. And it's been profound, actually. I already know that I've positively impacted a lot of people at work. Predominantly women, but not only women. I was actually surprised at how many men that feel the same way, that they've been brought up in a similar way. So I'm pretty passionate about it. It's new still, but I think this is going to last. I think this is going to stick. And I'm just going to keep looking for more tools to put in my tool belt to help me move in the right direction that I need to move in. And keep sharing those as much as I can. But yeah, it's impacting everything, absolutely everything.
I think that's great. I think it's often so easy to pin all our hopes on one big change. And it can have such a dramatic impact. You know, something like keto can have a huge impact on your life. It certainly had a big impact on mine. It's impacted my depression. It's impacted migraines. It's impact issues with weight regain after the weight loss surgery. But and there is usually a period of time where you're feeling great and you're feeling, you know, like this is it. This is the answer to everything. But then not inevitably, because it's not the case for everybody. Sometimes that is the only change they needed to make to fix everything. But I'm, you know, seeing for more and more people that you start running into problems and things start slipping or things start, you know, going back. And as Amy Berger says, you know, keto is so simple. And it is. It's a simple approach. But it's not always easy. So it's not always easy to do. And then we quite often find that it's not answering all those questions and it's not solving all those problems. And we do need to turn to something else. And inevitably, it has to do with the emotional side and the mindset and the behavior. And that's certainly where, you know, more of my focus and interest has gone to as well, because it seems like that is, you know, the final piece. If you've already been addressing these things, you know, if you've changed a lot of these lifestyle habits, if you've changed your diet, maybe you're getting more exercise, maybe you're addressing stress, you've been addressing sleep, you've been looking at all these things, and it's that last sort of bit of the puzzle. But it seems it's actually such a big and important part And sometimes you think, you know, maybe if you started with that one, but obviously benefit of hindsight, but it seems to be, it is a very important part of the puzzle, I think.
I think it goes back to what I said earlier about that shake company, right? You know, I said they had a solution for weight loss. There are a lot of different ways people can lose weight. Mm. A lot of them successful. I actually love keto. I love the way I feel when I'm, you know, eating properly keto, and the food is delicious.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly impacts your mood, right? I mean, it does affect your brain. There's no two ways about that.
It does, yeah. And the food is delicious, right? Mm. It's actually a very, very satisfying and satiating lifestyle. Mm. But the one thing that most way of eating lifestyle diets, they only address the weight. They don't address the emotional aspect of why are you overweight? What brought you here, right? And that also goes back to, you know, I said earlier, like people who have had obesity challenges their entire life, right? Now, I was an obese five-year-old, and I will tell you that I had some significant trauma before then that I actually remember. People who have obesity their entire life, there's not enough willpower to keep you thin and healthy or slim or whatever your goal is, unless you know and address, in my mind, and I'm not saying this is the only way, and I'm not saying this is true for everybody, but it is for most of the people that I know. There is a reason why you've been struggling with weight your whole life, and it's not a lack of education, and it's not a lack of knowledge, and it's not actually a lack of willpower either. So you have to discover what that is for you. And for me, it's I have always put myself last, and I'm resentful, and I hate that this is how society expects me to be. And I'm just, you know, I guess rebellious enough that I chose this as the one thing I can control. Mm. And it's the one thing, you know, it also, for me personally, helps me, I don't know how to say this in a way that will make sense or be meaningful to others, but the first big trauma that I remember when I was 5 years old was one of my brothers are older than I am, 5 years and 8 years older than I am. And one of their friends tried to rape me when I was not even in kindergarten yet. So just to tell you a little bit about how my mind works, it was him and his sister, actually, and she's my age, 1 year older than I am. And we were friends, and I used to go over to their house all the time. And in this case, the parents weren't home. And it was the first time that the parents weren't home. They lived on the same hill as my grandmother. And I knew, like, I was 5 years old. So what happened before then that I knew that I just had to find a place that was safe to convince him to take me somewhere where I could be rescued? I was five. So I did that. I convinced him that it was safe behind my grandmother's shed. And so he went along with that. And of course, they heard us because I knew the acoustics around that place. I'd been trying to hide behind there for years and I always got caught. Hmm. So the end of the story is that he did not rape me because my aunt rescued me. Mm. So being overweight to me, and that wasn't the only time, it wasn't the only time that people tried to rape me, and I've actually not always been as successful as with this guy. But the weight is a protection from that, right? For me. So I have to deal with that. How do I deal with that? Well, I'm working on it right now. But in the past, that's always stopped me from losing enough weight. I would get to a point where it was really uncomfortable. I didn't want to be around people. I would end up staying home, being depressed, not wanting to risk it. And, you know, just safer to be fat and not get that attention. You know, as an older adult now, I don't have that same fear. I know a lot more, and we have all cell phones anyway, so we can call for help if we need to. But the concern about my weight is different, but that feeling is still so strong because it was from childhood. Mm. You know, it happened again when I was 10. I got, you know, I was actually raped by my first boyfriend when I was 15. And nobody actually believed me, but that, you know, I would tell people. I actually filed a police report. It got lost. In that particular instance, you know, how I said I'd never felt like I was good enough. People outside of my relationship with my boyfriend blamed me. They said I was mean and I deserved it. Really, you say that to somebody. I was attacked by three men when I was 18. I beat them up with a bag light and got away. They were drunk. I was sober. I was raped again when I was 19 at a party. All friends that I had known since kindergarten. And it was within walking distance of my home. And it was early. It was like almost daylight. And I said, I'm going to walk home. And one of my friend's husbands said, I'll walk with you. And he raped me on the way home. And, you know, I had to wait. I went to the hospital for the rape kit and filed a police report. And they were both lost. Hmm. Small community and everybody knows everybody. Hmm. But I came to find out when I told my friends at that party what had happened, that every single one of them had been raped by this man.
Wow.
And they didn't stop me from leaving. So I have a lot of baggage to deal with. But, you know, it took this for me to admit that that was part of the problem with the weight loss.
Well, you know, I've said it before. Our bodies, our minds are pretty smart, and they find ways to protect us.
They sure do.
And it's not always obvious, and it sometimes has a lasting impact that ends up, you know, doing the opposite, ends up causing damage. But the main driver, the original driver for that behavior is one of protection. When you understand that, it becomes... I think it's the biggest first step into, you know, sorting things out, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, and it's funny. It took that video. I had repressed most of this, you know. I had forgotten about, I had stuffed it down so far deep. I had forgotten about a lot of it. Last summer, the guy who raped me when I was 19 actually sent me a friend request on Facebook.
Wow.
And that's what triggered the memory. And I went to therapy for that, actually. It's kind of funny that, at least in my experience, the therapists think as long as you can talk about something, you're better. But that wasn't the case for me. I hadn't dealt with the why or the emotions that it brought up. I think it was the start of something, but it wasn't, and I'm still nowhere near the end, right? This is going to be a lifelong journey. But when I read Kelly's post, well, you shared it, but it's her story.
That's right.
And I started going through all the links. That's what clicked for me immediately. That's what clicked. It's like, it's one more way that I'm choosing to make other people comfortable over myself, right? Rather than, I know this is going to sound silly because how could, you know, being overweight, I'm sure overweight women get raped, overweight men get raped as well. But it really clicked for me that, so even when I was overweight, 213, 215, 230 pounds, even 250 pounds, I don't know, I have this air of confidence and comfort about myself, which is, I don't know where it comes from, honestly, but other people perceive it. And we would, my husband would take me out and he'd be like, those guys are checking you out. And it's totally not because I never thought it was because of how I looked. I always assumed it was my personality, my presence. So it's odd because 250 was always that magic number for me that I could never get below. And I sort of kind of knew it was because of, you know, all the rapes and the unwanted attention, but I never dealt with it. And I didn't understand what that experience had done to me, how it had changed me. You know, you think, I've talked about it, I've went to therapy, I've accepted it, I've forgiven, or whatever it is that you've done. But you haven't dealt with how it changed your life, how you started behaving differently because of that experience and how it had a cascading effect on everything else that you've ever done and how things could have or would have been different, which you can't go back and change, but you can still start making those choices now that you're realizing you can do things differently, which is what this did for me. And I know it sounds weird because it was a video on chronic pain, but it opened this door and I'm going to keep it open. Mm. I'm still terrified of 250, but we'll get there. I'm going to keep the door open. And sorry. I can't believe this is the first time I'm actually really crying, not just tears, because normally I can't get through this far in the story without bawling. I guess I'm doing some work, right? But it's very emotional, you know?
Of course. Like you say, it's a very difficult thing, and it's a very good illustration of what you said before about deep down, maybe more near the surface, there are people that we know who don't want to face it, who don't want to do the work. And it's not a question of judging them and thinking they should be doing it. It's more a question of actually understanding. I understand why you don't want to do it. I understand why you don't want to face it. I understand why you don't want to do the work, because it's hard.
It is so hard. It is so hard.
But all you can keep doing is keep presenting the information, keep presenting the opportunity and the tools, and to lay them out and to say they're here for you and you are ready to look at them. Mm-hmm. Because there is a way out of the chronic pain. There is a way out of the things that you're feeling. But on the other hand, it's a hard way out.
It's really hard. And I'm sure, you know, my story is my story and everybody has their own story. Whatever the story is, whatever the trauma was, it's significant enough that you've chosen to not deal with it and instead put up with the pain, right? Because the pain is a distraction. And I really believe that. Now, I had no clue. I'm so grateful for that post, Daisy. You have no idea. And I obviously am the kind of person who will do the work even if it hurts, even if it's scary, maybe especially if it's scary. But it's really painful. And the things that it brings up, you know, are a lot of the ways that society controls people are through fear and you know, making you feel that it's your fault. My first boyfriend was a narcissist, you know, classic narcissist. And he had me convinced it was my fault, that everything was my fault, that I deserved it. And then my family supported that, you know. So it brings up those feelings for me that not only did I believe them and that I thought that was the truth and I should have known better. And, you know, so if you think about the people in your life who may be in an abusive relationship and you wonder why they don't leave, maybe they're trying to, but they don't have any support. Mm. You know, I didn't get any support until one night. I was 16, 17. No, I think I was 16. And I was going to pick up my best girlfriend to go watch a hockey game. And mom had given me her car. And it was winter. And I had to drive by a cliff. And my ex-boyfriend was following me. I had broken up with him by then, this narcissistic asshole. He tried to ram me off the cliff.
Wow.
In my car. Mm. He followed me to my friend's home. I can't believe she was brave enough to get in the car with me when I told her what happened. There's part of me that thinks she didn't believe me. So we got in the car and we drove over that cliff again. And she got to experience it too. And then all of a sudden, I had an ally. He had tried to kill me so many times. Walking on the side of the road, he would try to hit me with his car. Or he would stop beside me and throw me in his car and lock the doors with the child locks on, threatening to drive us both over the cliff, threatening my family. But anyway, on that night, he followed me home, and he wanted to fight. And I wouldn't get out of the car. I was scared. And I rolled down the window just a little bit so I could hear what he was saying. It was winter and it was a bit stormy. He pulled my hair and smashed my head into the window, into the driver's side window. And my mom happened to be doing dishes and she saw this. I put the car in reverse and I drove over his foot and broke his arm.
Good for you.
I drove off. I didn't go very far. I just went down the road and pulled into a driveway and turned everything off to hide. And I waited hours and hours and hours before I was brave enough to go home. Like, eventually he's just going to give up. He doesn't know where I'm at. And I knew he didn't know where I was at because he didn't just show up. And I went home and mom apologized and we had a heart to heart. It was kind of weird, you know. It's weird, like, to finally have somebody accept you and believe you. But I was still so mad. Like, why did it take this? Still dealing with that anger right now, actually. I haven't talked to my mother since I started this because I don't know how. I don't actually blame her for anything. I know she did the best that she could, that she knew how. She was a reflection of how she was raised, which was very similar. She was just doing what she knew. And I actually I'm not mad at her and I'm not upset, but I don't know how to talk to her now. I'm a different person. And I'm not ready yet.
Well, I was just going to say, I think you just have to have a little patience with yourself and trust that there will come a time. It's early days and you've just got to give yourself a bit of time until you figure out how to have that conversation.
Oh, absolutely.
And you will figure it out, but and it just needs to wait until that time.
Absolutely.
You know, you can't do everything at once.
No. And I know you're right. I know that's the case. You know, I keep picking up that phone. And it's funny, I have a landline only because it's free to call Canada on the landline, and it's very expensive on a cell phone. I keep picking up that phone and putting it down. I know eventually I will actually dial the number. But I have more work to do on myself first. I have to dig into this more. And I have to forgive myself. It's funny because I think this again is probably classic, I think, to most, maybe most of us. It's so much easier to forgive others. So much easier to forgive others than it is to forgive yourself. On a side note, my toilet paper is here.
This is a funny story. I think that's probably a really good note to finish on, that you have to quickly tell us the toilet paper story because it's very, very funny.
Sure. Well, okay. So I have a quarterly Amazon subscription set up for toilet paper and paper towel. And this was November was my subscription was due to ship. And I got a message from Amazon saying that they were out of stock, which is kind of funny. It's a small order. I didn't think it was just odd. So I said, yep, okay, so cancel the order. Or actually just, I postponed it, so skip one. And I started looking online because I'm like, well, there's got to be some place that has toilet paper and paper towel. And oddly enough, there were so many places that were sold out. But I found one place, Staples, which is an office supply company here in the U.S.
Yeah, I know. Staples. Yeah. Same over here. Well, in the U.K. anyway, not France.
Yeah. And they do, bulk supplies for offices, but I didn't clue in. So I'm putting an order in for, I thought I was ordering 6 rolls of paper towel and 10, so 4 packs of toilet paper. But what I actually ordered were 6 cases of paper towel and 10 cases of toilet paper. So, yeah, it's just one of those weird things. I didn't even notice it. I didn't know I had done it. The per unit price was so amazing. I should have clued in, but I didn't. It was, you know, late at night, and I just put the order in, and I woke up the next morning to a $500 charge on my account. And I'm like, what the heck did I buy? I wasn't even drinking last night. So I pulled up the invoice for the purchase, and sure enough, it said cases. So they just delivered the toilet paper.
And I was joking with you saying, because of course it's that time, I think I've heard people talking about, you know, the supermarket shelves have been empty of toilet paper again. So you were going to have a hard time convincing the delivery guy that you weren't one of these toilet paper hoarders. It was a genuine mistake. And I think you're going to have to cancel that renewal subscription on Amazon for quite a while by the sounds of it. You're going to have enough toilet paper for years.
So I did some math, and it's 3.5 years. Well, just under 3.5 years. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, maybe I'll have a sale in the neighborhood if people are running out. I don't even want to make a profit. You can have it at cost. The guy is still carrying toilet paper out. Oh my gosh, I feel so bad.
He's going to be doing it for the rest of the day, I should think.
Oh, he closed the door. So I guess that was the last of it. But yes, no, it was I was really embarrassed by it. Particularly because I had sort of kind of been making fun of the hoarders as well. And here I am. And to be fair,
you're now a toilet paper hoarder.
Right? You know, and to be fair,
accidental toilet paper hoarder.
Goodness, it is a bit embarrassing. And to be fair, I'm not sure, you know, I know that there are some people who have been hoarding because there have been news articles about people buying up all these supplies and then trying to sell them for profit. But I wonder too, you know, maybe some other people made the mistake I made. But, you know, if you have 300 or 400 people shopping at a store and each person buys one extra package because they're concerned about a shortage, that's 300 extra packages, right? So you could quite honestly empty the store shelves that way as well with nobody actually being a hoarder.
True.
But I've definitely, I'm embarrassed. I'm going to try the Christmas tree idea that you provided, though.
Yeah, you know, I think that could be good. Although I also can envisage now the potential aftermath of that if your cats are cats that like shredding toilet paper. I can see your toilet paper gigantic tree turning into a massive pile of shredded toilet paper, so maybe that wouldn't be such a good idea.
And we have at least one who is a scratcher, so that's probably a good point. But yeah, that was just too funny. I had to share it with the group because I just, you know, that's one of those things of being able to laugh about, you know, at yourself.
Absolutely.
So it's part of it was just too good to not share. I'm grateful that I didn't empty my checking account as well.
Well, thank you, Kelly, for being so open and vulnerable and brave sharing your story. As you know, we always end up with a top tip. And other than not accidentally ordering toilet paper, what would be your top tip to share with us?
So given the topic of, we had a wide variety of topics today, but I actually think my top tip would be to not automatically do things just because it's expected of you, just because you've been made to believe that's the right thing, or that you're trying to be a good person or perceived to be a good person. Only do the things that really mean something to you, and really put a lot of thought into the things that maybe your instincts are telling you you shouldn't do. before you just give in to the pressure. So I guess what I'm saying is it's okay to put your needs first. It's not selfish. It's not, you know, it's nothing negative. It's actually self-care and self-preservation. And in the end, we'll all end up, if we could all do this, we'd all end up being healthier and happier and better able to deal with the challenges that the world throws at us.
Very true. Thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you for sharing some of your time with me today. It's been a very, very great pleasure.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure, Daisy. I've enjoyed our time together. I hope, you know, some of this will resonate with someone and help them on their journey. And yeah, that's actually, you know, that's actually my big motivation for having this call with you, was you shared something with me that changed my life. And now I have the opportunity to share something that may change somebody else's in a positive way. So thank you.
Absolutely.
You know, Google is so powerful. And one of the things that I always recommend, regardless of the topic, is be creative with your Google search, right? So if there's something in any of the links or in the podcasts or links that you will share that resonates with anybody, but it's not quite right, customize what you're looking for to be a little bit more specific to your own personal experience or what it is that you're struggling with. And the likelihood that you will find something good and meaningful is really high. You know, you have a basis, something to start with, you know, with all the information that you'll be sharing, all the links. So that will give a starting point to everybody. But it's really quite, you know, the internet is a powerful tool. And once you find something that resonates with you, it's typically pretty easy to find more of that or somebody that has benefited from it. And yeah, just use technology to your benefit. I know that's what I did. And I can honestly tell you, I have a long road ahead of me, but the leaps that I've taken it's been 7 weeks now since I initially read that post. The amount of distance I've traveled towards whatever it is that I'm moving towards has been tremendous, phenomenal. More in the last 7 weeks than the previous 7 years. So I really, you know, if you're willing to do the work, I really encourage everybody. I think as anybody in our community, you know, if people want to reach out to me as well, I'm happy. I'm happy to be connected with them.
Great. Well, thanks for that. Well, we'll include a link somehow. We'll work out a way to do that. People can get in touch with me, might be the easiest way.
That would be great. And I, you know, again, just want to say thank you. I will forever be grateful for that post. You've actually helped me tremendously. You, your podcast, but you directly as well. But the communities that you've created on Facebook have been a tremendous support and help for me over the years. And so, you know, the opportunity to give a little back means a lot to me. So thank you for this opportunity.
Well, thank you.
I'm awful at saying goodbye, by the way.
To get the resources and links from this show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com/episodes. Please share this podcast with as many people as possible by sharing one of my links or just taking a screenshot of an episode that you enjoyed. Reviews really help raise the profile of the podcast, which gets it in front of more people, but also helps me attract a wide variety of guests. So please take a minute to leave a review on whichever podcast app or platform you like to listen on. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share, and comment on my posts. Your support really does mean the world to me. Thank you. Are you enjoying this podcast? Help me make more episodes and videos by making a pledge at my Patreon page, patreon.com/ketowomen, or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman Podcast website. Don't forget to join in the fun on the Keto Woman Podcast Instagram and Facebook pages and Daisy_KetoWoman on Twitter. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you would like to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. This week's end quote is from James Clear and came from his weekly newsletter. The influence of every experience in your life is determined by the meaning you assign to it. Assign a more useful meaning to your past, and it becomes easier to take a more useful action in the present. Bye-bye, Keto Lovelies.